fundamental rights. We published that rule. We had both of your two comments. Maybe more than that. Some very good comments that came in expressing some concerns with how those rules were written up. So I'm requesting that the state engineer just keep continuing doing what the state engineer has done in the past. Others trying to request us to be more clear and give more information about what needs to be in these soil supply statements and how we go about identifying what these water rights are actually worth. Beneficial use is the basis of measure. The limit of the rights to use water in the state is the method upon which we judge the water right for consideration in our administrative action, change applications, any other administrative action provision, and it's very important for us to know what these water rights are. After reviewing the comments last year, based on the rule that was written, we've decided not to pursue that rule. To be as open as we possibly can to get your input to make this thing work right. We need some help in determining what these rights are. We want to make sure we have your involvement. If you don't want to be involved, let the state engineer do it. We're sort of happy to do that. We will try to do our very best about evaluating what those rights are. But ECM has put together a presentation today to kind of walk through this new rule, and goes through that. Help answer questions as we go through, and he'll show a PowerPoint here to talk about some of the attributes of this new rule, and we'll just see if we can get any questions before us that you feel like we might not have answered, as things we might need to add or subtract from what we've got prepared. So we appreciate your being here and for the comments that you'll make today, and we do appreciate your input and our looking forward to it. Thank you. There were some things that we were trying to accomplish as we looked at the comments that we received. We were trying to address the concerns about when well, the first thing that happened is we changed the nomenclature. We used to call group contribution statements. We were trying to be a little bit more clear and expressive about what it actually was, and came up with a declaration of individual beneficial use amounts, which creates a horrendous acronym that we don't know how to pronounce. So I'll probably just talk about declarations today, and that's what I'm talking about, is those declarations for beneficial use. But we wanted to narrowly define when those declarations would be required in expression of this rule, it was pretty much open-ended that all the time we need them for everything. So we're trying to narrowly define that. We wanted to, one of the other comments was, what happens when a light comes in and some problem that we can't solve? So we tried to create a process that would involve the school here in resolving those issues so that the one can finish all of them when the problem is developed. And the other thing that may not be as clear here, but in the rule, is previously submitting a group contribution statement with now declaration was part of the change application process. It was an integral part of that process. Now we're trying to set this up as a separate standalone process. The process of the current beneficial use stands alone outside of the change application process. If it's needed, this happens, and then the change application.
Well, there was an exemption. We talked about
instead to try and narrowly define when these are needed, that in most cases would exempt municipalities. Generally, with their file change applications, won't fall into this group, but you know they will fall out of this need because of these conditions that have to exist before one is needed. Because there might be situations when a municipality has to file a declaration. If they purchase a water right that's in a water use group and want to file a change and move it out of that group, we would need them to file a declaration of official use on that. So we didn't want to exempt them completely. This writing of the rule also includes something that's different, that's new, in that there are times in our water right group process when we feel that there is a need for a declaration of beneficial use. And that wasn't really talked about in the last writing. And so since this is a separate process and stands by itself, it can also accommodate our water right group process. So in this situation, a declaration will be required, or may be required. This isn't necessary, but if we decide that it is, the changer will ask for it. If, of course, the beneficial use hasn't been quantified, if the water rights group is on fewer than all of the water rights in the water use group, and that happens sometimes, the group is on just one of those rights, or if the water right holders doesn't own all of the water rights in the water use group, so it's one owner of multiple owners, he's filing a proof on his water right, but the beneficial use isn't defined, will require this that a declaration is needed. So as we receive one of those, we will be looking at them, and the rule describes the process that they'll use. First of all, we'll look to see if it's complete. If it's not complete, according to what we talked about, it will be sent back to the water users to complete it. It has to meet that earlier criteria. But then also we'll review that declaration to see if it's consistent with the state engineer's record, the water rights of record. If it's not consistent, then we'll return it also to the water user and explain the inconsistency, where we see the problem, and what's why we can't assess it. If it is consistent, then we will move ahead to update our records according to the information that's included in that in the declaration of beneficial use. The other writing of this rule talked about a request for the state engineer to review his records in comparison to what we have on our database. And what's in this rule is essentially the same. We really haven't changed that from what was in the previous writing of the rule. And so, briefly, that is if a water user sees that there's a problem between what they think is in the record, the documentary record of the state engineer, versus what we show in our electronic records, they can ask for us to take a look at that. They need to indicate what they think the problem is, and then we'll go through and make the adjustments that are needed in as timely manner as we can. Also, in the other writing, there was this provision that as we see errors in water use groups, because we know that the process wasn't perfect by which these groups were set up, that the state engineer reserves the right to go back, and any time we find errors that are not consistent with the water right record, that we can go back and adjust our water rights groups accordingly to resolve those errors. And to make things hopefully more clear. And so, then the thing that's really new in this rule is this opportunity for the state engineer to get involved if there are problems, if the water user runs into problems in trying to create a declaration of beneficial use. And so we set up here, we try to be fairly limited. Because we really want the water user first to do due diligence, really, and his best effort in trying to prepare a declaration of beneficial use before he comes to the state engineer to request that assistance. And so the requirements are First of all, that there has to be some need for administrative action. If a water user wants to submit a declaration anytime, even though there's not an administrative action pending, he can do that. But if he wants to have the state engineer help him, then there has to be a need for this to be done in order, when I say pending it, what I meant was there needs to be this to be done before he can submit a change application. If there's a need for that, then he certainly can ask for the state engineer's help. Also, he needs, as I said, needs to have exhausted reasonable effort and any approaches that might be necessary. Needs to do his best in preparing the declaration and have not succeeded. And there are several situations where we think this might happen. If it's not possible to identify one of the water right holders or the successors to that water right holder, and they made an effort to do that, then they need to explain to the state engineer in their request what they've tried and why it appears that effort is not successful, why they can't proceed. There are situations where one or more parties refuse to participate for whatever reason. Participate in the apportionment of the beneficial use among water users, or they just refuse to sign a period. In this case, then, they need to, again, explain to the state engineer what they've tried, who won't participate, if there's reasons that they understand as to why, any information that they have that they need to provide to the state engineer. But we also know that there might be other reasons that would prevent a water user from completing one of these. And as long as they can get a good explanation of why they can't complete it, then we'll accept that and be willing to assist them. Again, the state engineer will provide a form for this application to be made. We'll ask for any, like I said, any information, documentation they have about the situation, why they can't complete it. Again, there's an acknowledgement that as the station makes its apportionment, this is not a general communication of our rights. Again, just a process to allow us to move forward in administrative action. And that as they make this application to the station, the water user needs to provide notice to all other possible parties as much as possible. And if they don't know who the other parties are, certainly they can't do that. But if they know who the parties are, then they need to send them notice. The applicant needs to send notice to let them know that they made this application to the state engineer. We will review that application to make sure it's complete and they provide all the information we've asked for, and to see if it complies with those conditions that we've outlined. If it's complete, if it's not complete, not compliant, or if we think that they haven't really expended the amount of effort that they need to, if we think there's things that they can try that they haven't tried, we'll send that back to them with an explanation of why, of what they need to do, of why we won't accept it. If it is complete, then we'll accept the application and then we'll move ahead with the apportionment. And so the rule then describes the process that the state engineer is going to go through to apportion the beneficial use among the waterways in the water use group. First of all, we'll send a notice to all the parties and request information. We'll request information about their use of water under their water right in this water use group. We'll ask for any records that they have of that water use. We'll ask for their understanding of what their water right is in relation to the other water rights in the water use group. Then we'll allow them at least 30 days for a reply to that request. It may go longer depending on the situation. We'll have to take a look at what we think is reasonable in the situation. But it will be at least 30 days for a reply. Then once that 30 days is run, we will take the information that we've received from the application, what was involved in the application. We will look at what we got from the other water users pursuant to our request to them.
And then we'll look at any other pertinent information, and this includes the documents that you have in the records of the state engineer's office. And so we'll take a look at things like the priority dates of the various rights, if there are flow rates attached to them, if there are quantities of water attached to them for any reason. We'll look at anything that might give us an indication as to how the beneficial use ought to be divided up. And then we'll move ahead and make, based on that information, make a preliminary apportionment of the water right. Then, based on that apportionment, we will send a notice out to the parties, to the holders of the water rights in the water use group. And we will tell them what the apportionment is, we'll explain how we arrived at that apportionment, and we will advise them at that time of their right to protest if they don't agree with what we've concluded in our work. And we'll allow a 30-day period for protests. Depending on the nature of the comments or protests that we get, the state engineer might hold a hearing. The purpose of that would be to try and get more information. If we think it would be helpful in gathering information, then we will hold one. And then, after, if we hold a hearing or not, but after we've collected more information through this process, we will review it. We'll take a look again at the process we used to apportion the water rights. And if it looks like there needs to be adjustments in the apportionment that was made, then the state engineer will make an apportionment, a revision at that time, and modify his work. At that time, then the state engineer will issue an order based on this apportionment. And this then would be considered a final action, agency action, subject to UAPA. And so, again, the parties would have the opportunities to request reconsideration, to appeal the decision of the state engineer if that was felt to be needed. Once that opportunity to request a number of review has passed, or the period for to ask for reconsideration has passed, if there have been no requests made or no appeals made, then the state engineer will update the records according to his apportionment of the water right. If there has been an action started in the district court to appeal this process or look for a de novo review, then we would wait until the completion of that process. And if there was a... and then we update our records based on the order of the court in that situation. As with the previous writing of the bill, there are exceptions as I indicated, the state engineer may request that a declaration be submitted at any time if we feel that it's needed as we're going through an administrative action. And this could be really during a change application process, during proof process. And this writing of the rule doesn't say it, but we think there's also probably times during the adjudication process that a declaration might be needed. And that's one thing in it. If we make changes in the future, we might insert to make that clear that we might ask for this during the water rights adjudication process. A water right holder can at any time fill out one of these declarations of beneficial use if they feel that their water right contributes no beneficial use to that group. And what this essentially does is to pull their water right out of that water use group. If they do this, they don't need any other signatures of the other water right holders. They can do that on their own. They can only do it for water rights that they own personally, that they have total ownership of. And once they submit one of these, then they can't retract it. We think that once they declare there's no beneficial use, then that pulls it out of that water use group permanently. If we receive any documents from the courts or other legal instruments that are similar to that quantify beneficial use of water rights within the water use group, the state engineer will certainly accept that and submit any time. Those do become the defining documents then of what the beneficial use is. Also, in line with the this idea that the senior can correct errors at any time, that a water right has been included in a water use group, like that's associated with a large irrigation company, and it's it really doesn't make a major impact to the company, or really isn't functionally needed by the company to operate. We'll pull that water right out of that water use group. Sometimes individual wells have been associated with shares, and that's become a water use group with the company. And a lot of times that's not needed, so we'll pull that water right out of the group. Sometimes that's happened with municipal rights or any other types of rights, sometimes with conservancy districts or federal Bureau of Reclamation rights. We think we can, a lot of times those groups aren't needed, we will pull a water right out of that type of group. The other thing that I did mention, I don't know if I passed on the slide, is that as with the other writing of the rule, a declaration of beneficial use does not change how water rights can be used supplementally together. Just because we go through and identify the sole supply use for each, or the beneficial use for each water right in the group, they can still be used together supplementally as they have been in the past. If in 1 year we rely on one right to meet all the uses or one source, that's still happening because the other sources don't provide them. As long as they're used supplementally together, the nature of the use within that group shouldn't change. So that's really, I think, in a nutshell. I don't think I've missed anything that were the highlights of the bill that, or the rule that we submitted. If you have any questions, I think we'd be glad to.
I'm hearing correctly then that if this process is needed, that it sounds to me like we're adding another couple of months onto the process.
In
preparation for a change.
In preparation for a change application, I think you're right. This will lengthen that process because we'll have to go through this first, and then we'll start the change application process. In reality, I don't know that it will be any longer, because if this had been part of the change application process, we would have to stop that process and do this and then move forward with the change application process. So the reality is, anytime you have a water right that's not defined in a water use group, it's going to take you longer to file the change application.
Do you have a sense of how many water rights are actually tied to groups in your database?
All of them.
All of them.
Not all.
All of them have more than one water right.
Not all of the water rights in our database are water rights. Well, they're all in groups, but some of them may just have one water right.
But how many have multiple water rights that are going to be impacted by it?
About half.
About half
of the groups have more than one water right in them.
Now, for those, how many water rights are involved? Do you have many groups that say more than five water rights?
Yes. Particularly stock watering rights with federal agencies have anywhere between 1 and 200 rights in that group for that particular allotment.
I assume that a lot of those water rights may have different ownership.
Most of those are, some do, some are in the name of one owner.
Steve first.
I'm just wondering how the groups are formed. Is it purely a function of identified place of use? Is that what the computer has pulled together?
Bill said you ought to talk to him afterwards if you want to know that. unless everyone's interested in that explanation, we can go through that.
There ought to be a short, simple answer.
Okay, Bill, short, simple answer.
In the old database, each water right had, I will use stock watering as an example. Let's say we had 3 rights that watered the same 200 head of stock. That 200 head was listed on each of those rights. And so if somebody said, how many head of stock are watered in this section, you get that number. What we did is we formed one group for 200 head and attached all 3 rights to that 200 head. So we didn't have the 200 head listed 3 times in the database, just listed once.
But how, in other situations, how did we decide what rights were supplemental to each other? beneficial use and commonplace use?
That was in the old PD books, and on some of the certificates, it listed, I think Harold called them, claims used for purposes described. Those were entered in the database, and where those groups were identical, they were put in the same group.
So
I may be confused, but it seems to me on some of the reclamation project water rights, where you've got very broad project areas, irrigation rights in particular, where irrigation project water is being used to supplement water rights held by other individuals, but they're getting lumped together as groups because they have common places of use, and yet you've got a federal interest that's very different.
No, they weren't lumped together by common place of use. They were lumped together by a decree saying water right number one is supplemental with two, three, and four. Now, we had cases where water rights one, two, three, and four were used supplementally for 200 head. Then later, somebody would come in and file a fifth water right for that 200 head. If we didn't go back and update the previous deal, you ended up with two groups, and those are the problems we're trying to fix now. Anything more complicated, I'll show you at the board afterwards.
But I think there were situations. I'm sorry, please.
I think the important part of the answer is that in making the database modification, we didn't make any new assumptions about what was supplemental. All we did was remanage the data so that same thing showed on all the rights.
As we met with the coalition, there were some very intriguing, forceful what the groupings did. One had over 6,000, and most of these would be in public water supply, in fact, in the very setting. But Sullivan City, and that grouping showed all of the water rights in Sullivan City, including the city's and private water rights. That gets very problematic. And most of those rights probably weren't private rights, were tied in with the city's authorization. And so as we went through, there were some really intriguing stories about what the groupings did, and that's kind of the comment to get from Steve. And in that kind of setting, if you have a grouping that had four separate rights, you were independent of each other, but now you're in a group, you're now supplemental, they're added with the burden of the process that you have for the reality that they really work. The process seems to work really good where you have a truly supplemental water situation. The classic one is you have a surface right and then a well right to supplement that water. That process works really pretty good.
On his acres, but if he's not taking it out of that group, then by our definition,
application to move one diversion to a well. And on one water right, one right,
right,
and that would be okay.
Right.
So,
yeah.
The other thing that I think...
That's in the same part of the same... Yeah, he's not taking it out of the group.
No,
he's still
using it. This example is that. The other thing that... sit down and talk about the group, what the group should look like. So that in this example, this guy knows, okay, that's my group and I can do it. And then other examples from other users, if there's an opportunity to make sure that their group, their rights, they're in the group, that somebody else is a defined thing that they're reasonably comfortable with, that would
You know, we didn't say it in the rule, and correct me, Ken, if I misspeak here, but the rule did say the signature can make those kind of changes, and I don't know if there's anything that precludes a water user from making a request to the signature to take a look at my group, because I think there's some problems with how it's set up. I think that's what you're talking
yeah,
about.
I think that's
what all the frustration.
Yeah, I think that...
And I think we're open to that. I don't know if we need to include that in the rule, but I don't think the rule says we can't.
I think the rule does address it because it says that you can bring errors or discrepancies to the attention of the state.
Yeah.
We're happy to go through and make those adjustments.
Well, I think that would help a lot of users understand.
Well, and we sort of, I think it's a, anytime you deal with this kind of a change in water rights and the type of database we have, it's going to take a while before all of the knots are worked out. We think there are still some knots involved. This would have to go through this process.
Should we know for them to the municipal city ordinance use? Their place of use and nature of use, the only thing that changes occasionally is the water rights as defined in the unit application are changed using the municipal It still seems to me that ought to be a more specific exclusion of those kinds of rights. I have thought from the history that the city applies to water rights in the farm, that maybe within the boundaries of the district, that burden fell upon the seller to do that rather than the buyer. I realize you wouldn't get it, but just the question of one of your comments, whose job is that to push comes to shove.
Again, it probably makes more sense from our point of view. This is a person who wants to file a change application. That's the person who has the burden of trying to define what they want, which is just the problem you said. But it really is, in our view, we don't have any way to work with anybody else that a potential applicant is as to how to move forward with that process.
Say the municipality will that trigger a sole supply evaluation or anything?
No. It triggers within that. If they're buying a water right within a water use group, it triggers a beneficial use quantification or apportionment within that group itself, not
right,
within all of their other water use.
In the seller's group.
In the seller's group.
It has nothing to do with the buyers being districts in the city to make the changes internally their own stuff. They're going to be, in effect, exempt.
That's right.
I'm concerned a little on the quantification side. I understand the stock water in example that Bill put out. That one's real easy, that it can be up X number of head over all these windows of water sources and you have to somewhat arbitrary allocation that you can do that in some of the use. And in the true supplemental context where I've got a surface water right supplemented by a well, in years where my surface water right is running very well, I don't pump my well at all because I don't need to. In drought year, I may pump the well because I don't have a surface supply, and then I decide to carve that well out and sell that to supplemental water. How am I going to quantify that when the use has been all over the map?
Well, I think one of the things in the rule talks about long term. If you get a long term record of what your use has been for the well. But again, I think we're going to take a look at every case individually. Every situation is going to have different circumstances, probably. So we didn't want to really tightly define how we do this.
Steve, we've had some people come before us and say they've got those supplemental wells, they really haven't used them. Yeah, they want to file a change, and so we're saying, okay, well, why are you giving up? You can use it for the right thing. There's beneficial use associated. If you're going to sell something, you're doing that. So we ask them what they're doing, and we're not giving up anything. And we're saying, well, then we're not going to enforce that. You can't find a beneficial use associated with that. Certainly, you can keep it as a supplemental well and use it as a supplemental well as long as you don't do that. But if you're going to sell that supplemental right, it's going to have to be quantified to a certain number of certain beneficial use that we can identify that can be moved that will be diminished from that system.
And I don't disagree with that analysis. I think that has to happen. In 1 year, I'm diverting 4 acres in the well. The next year, I take only one because my surface supplies are giving me my full duty. How do I put a quantification on that?
But I think based on what Kent said, Steve, that it's really up to the water user. If the water user wants to say this is worth 5 acres of irrigation, as long as he owns all the water that's in that water use group, and he's selling one to move it out, we'll say, fine, whatever you decide, the others are just limited to that,
yeah.
Or just reduced by that.
Reduced by that amount.
We had a situation involving the city of South Jordan that bought a farmer supplemental well right with supplemental irrigation that was shared. It was like a 3 second foot right put in, and sort of was a drought relief well. While a change on that, I think they paid like $90,000 for that first thing. That in, and we started looking at it, and we asked the question, how to use that? It hadn't been used for a few years, but we went back and checked power records and put everything together, and then in the last 15 years, I found out that most of the difference in were 14 acres. Well, probably worth 14 acres. If that's what you want to identify, we're going to have to give something else up. We didn't want to give anything else up, so we said it's 14 acres. We didn't see, we went back to the market. That's not a good price for a lot. So they negotiated that and got the water right back. But that's what they kind of obviously did. It was a dramatic choice. Justify what it is. Or define what you want that to be. And if you define something that's got
to come out of the grass on the accounts.
One concern that I know some of the companies have is we're 73.5, and only a shareholder can force a company. In effect, you file a change application. Does that force that company then to do these statements for all their groups? I mean, it's a great way to say no, we're never going to grant those change applications. Then we're going to have a certain representative, I know, unhappy.
I think the position we've been taking on this is just the irrigation company's right is defined as a surface area unit for a total number of acres. When that shareholder comes and pulls this out, there's an identification of the number of acres that's going to be moving out. The company then would be reduced by that number of acres.
So they won't have to reduce their service area?
No, service area stays the same. Just the total number of acres they can irrigate has to be reduced by what's going out. But it wouldn't have to go to do a sole supply statement. Just they've got to quantify.
City buys it. That's
that's got to be quantified in the number of these Facebook shares, but it doesn't really mean anything other than you're going to have to reduce the number. You can't irrigate. You can't sell something, try to move down and have the same number of acres. So it's got to be reduced. But a lot of times we have shareholders come, they have no clue where the water comes. They've got it from a broker and
well, or it happens to be the broker himself who's buying the share.
It does.
Yeah.
It does happen, but irrigation company shares, it can be moved around. And we talked one time about, well, you've got to identify those acres, and that's got to be cut out. The problem is, another shareholder can come in the very next day and say, this is where I want my shares delivered, that's where those shares came off, and they can do that. The total number of acres in the company has to be reduced somewhere.
When you file a proof, you're not going to have to go through this before you file the proof. can still file the proof, he'll accept the proof, and then the...
And usually what we'll do is, going through the proof process, we'll find that we don't have all the information we need, and then we'll request a declaration and issuance.
So
it doesn't slow, you don't have to...
We don't have to worry about missing the deadlines, because that's what we didn't accept this move.
Right.
In the context of a and the change application, where you have holdouts or for whatever reason you can't get people to sign the declaration and you need to go through this informal adjudicative process, at that point, do you then abandon the flexibility to go on other measures? For example, when Steve was talking about you've got your well and your surface, right? You use it different every year. As long as you want to sell your well and you're willing to give up X acres of that irrigation, you can set, you can allocate the soil supply however you want, and the beneficial use however you want.
That's only if they don't own the water rights.
Right, exactly. So if you get into the the administrative process, will the hallmark always be average use over time, or will there still be some flexibility?
Well, I think that the St. Cyr's going to have to take a look at the circumstances, and we want that flexibility, because we'll have to see what makes sense in those situations as to how it's apportioned. I don't think there's a really rigid way for doing it, you know, every time. So, yeah, there's I think we'll be flexible.
And I don't think we want to start taking it, because everything is not the same. Every change application, we looked at the division of water, it's, they all have their individual characteristics. How they all fit together, and so kind of less what's left. It's a balance on how those all work.
Lane Kent with Salt Lake City. This is Fred alluded. We've got quite a portfolio that's been accumulated through various droughts that our region have seen. We've been in this business for over 100 years, and many of those supplemental rights were acquired in the 30s that were, drought relief, significant bonding and investment was put into those. Many of those haven't been used for quite some time, and we are relying on those within our portfolio as we tackle the next century. You know, if we look back at 100 years of hydrology and we think we have a good hydrologic record, we in this room know that is just a drop in the bucket in terms of data. And so, we have a fiduciary and, in fact, a constitutional responsibility to hold those rights for public health and safety and drinking water. So there's the uniqueness of the municipal classification, the responsibilities we have to hold those rights and to, call this one supplemental that I haven't used, but I might need it next year because there's a fire in the watershed, or the climate change is just as bad as some of the people say it might be. We have a responsibility, and I'm talking not just Salt Lake City, you as well, to make sure that beneficial, that the water's there to provide that beneficial need. So specifically to some of these issues where you talk about over the course of our development within 134 square miles that I serve within Salt Lake City, we have many of these that these communities are going through now where, hey, I've got a farmer wants to develop, and he's got a couple of rights, and they go into the pool. We've got maybe some artesian wells or something like that. Those were the water rights that were pursued and developed during the drought that were essential to carry the community that we serve through that time period. So let me ask this for the 26 wells that I have, and many of those have numerous rights assigned to one well. When I look at the printout of your groupings, I've got, in some cases, 600 water rights tied to one. So if I got to do a change application because my well hole's gone south, I've got three wells right now with perchloroethylene contamination. So to fix that problem, I've got to go through the administrative procedure to now go through the entire portfolio, help me understand where that fits.
If you're just moving the location of a well and not changing anything else, then our rules will exempt you.
That's a change application.
It's a change application, but it's not taking it out of the supplemental group.
Okay.
It's not changing. It's not changing the beneficial use of any. You're not trying to remove it from the group.
Okay.
All you do is when you appoint it, you'll be exempt under this process.
Okay. And I thought I might read that in there, but it wasn't quite as explicit as I would have liked it to be. You know, for the people that place you and I in 20, 30 years, well, you know, we want to make sure that it's clear and clean for everyone.
Each of those conditions have to be met. There were those four conditions that you have to fall under each one of them. Each one of them have to apply.
Okay.
So if you're not taking anything out of a supplemental group, then you're exempt. That's one of the conditions that has to be removed from the supplemental group.
Okay. It might be helpful, at least for my personal comfort.
The other one was that the nature of the change required quantification of that beneficial use. Just moving a point of diversion, then there's no need for quantification.
Okay.
That also is
an issue. I'm not sure within our portfolio, but I know I would imagine there might be other municipalities that have a similar situation. Obviously, there's always the buyer beware, but if a city were to have water rights that hadn't gone through, you know, farmer developed his 100 acres, they acquired the rights and they hadn't filed the change application at that time of the transaction, then it falls on the burden of that municipality and all of the supplemental rights within that group now to go through that level of scrutiny and kind of sifting through that process. If I understand correctly.
You would have to figure out what that water rights worth that you would file a change and move it out of that group.
Hopefully they did that at the beginning when they did that, yeah, and put the burden on the developer.
These are wells you'd say. These would be these drought wells that you purchased but you've never filed changes to move them into the city system yet.
Some we have.
The ones that you have would be similar to the South Jordan case. Once when you move it in, they would change the nature of use, changing certain areas, and that I think you would look at.
The HP 51 basically required cities their public water supplies in the future when they acquire water rights to bring it in, they have to go through the change application process. Yes, you mentioned earlier that that would trigger an allocation from yourselves.
Right. These may be rights that were purchased way before that deadline.
Yeah,
we might have some supplemental rights for a
person. All that Tony did was make it yesterday, and all that 100 years ago. You could have read this to give me a second. I'd like to make a suggestion. One of the things that I think has been very helpful today, your outline of the rules.
This
one? Yeah. And what I would like to do is to have that so that I could forward that to Water Coalition members and then give them the chance to go through what you talk about here and line it up against the rule in favor of the wording to really say exactly, you know, what you're doing this year.
We hope it does.
But then, after we do that, I invite you to come to that meeting within 2 weeks or something like that, and we see whether or not that passed. It gives one more kind of, it allows you to take the Garden Pony Show on the road, in a sense, but it also gives the people that are impacted in the coalition the chance to look at that, come back against this and see what they're going to take. Because, for example, as we read through the rule, it was clear that there wasn't a municipal exemption, and that was one of the criteria that everybody pretty much recommended and said that we had in the next round. And so our first reading of it says there isn't a municipal exemption. So now you come back and say, well, it's here, these provisions. So what I'd like to do is to allow everybody to look at that and see if that clarifies that. And if there are changes, they may not have as many concerns as we thought we did.
Good. That'd be good. I think we can just put the PowerPoint up on the website, and the recording will be up on the website too. Right. So
is that going to be okay for the access?
It's a computer site.
Download it from there.
Tom?
Yeah, One more quick question, then I'll hide behind the call here again. So you helped me a bit understand under the change application clause and how you perceive the administration of the rule. The next one becomes under a proof due, and some of the active rights that we have many wells that we use primarily for peaking, but we have used them through year-round, and we feel it's important to meet our water demands and needs under whatever scenario might occur, whether a water plant goes down or something like that. So we want to preserve the full right, but yet we have not filed full proof on some of those, as you know. But as I look through the clause here, help me understand if that becomes a trigger for us. If I take one of the wells that have yet to be proved within our system, do we now have to go through the...
But you own all of the water rights in the use group.
In the group, correct. Yeah.
So generally that would say no, you don't, because you own all of the rights.
So Lee, there's a may clause here, and I know I always am keen, and I know most of the people in the room, that the mays and shalls always dictate what we think we should do and what we know we should do. I think that sort of clarification and fine-tuning the word verbiage. The other thing that if I recall, when you did your groundwater administration rule, at least for the Salt Lake Valley, if I recall, you put out some examples. You know, if you're this type of user and you want to do this, and I heard some good examples here from the attorneys in the room. You know, that help one, me understand, and two, be much more comfortable that we're on the same field. And then for succeeding individuals or generations, as they take this, if the rule stands, they understand how we and you envisioned execution of this, and the devil's in the details, and if it's spelled out, that might help.
I don't know where we put that, but I don't know. I think we're not opposed to that, but I don't think we can put examples in the rule.
Okay. Because I think there is... I think when Fred speaks about the specific exception to municipalities, that's something I can hang my hat on. And then as I hear you describe to me the process of taking these applications, it makes me feel warm and fuzzy when I go back and read the black and white here. You know, I need to make sure that I can hang my hat on it.
Can you distinguish for us, when we deal with federal stock water laws, the difference between the municipality, you're saying, if you own all the rights, and you're not removing anything from the group. And in our instance, we're probably just going to add a cross or place it. This may be changing the point of conversion, but we have the same thing.
It would apply to federal agencies then, too.
So we would be exempt from having to do it in those groups.
Right. That was why we didn't want to create specific exemptions for classes of water users, and instead have just general standards that apply to everybody. And so as long as you fall outside of the criteria that we set there, then it applies to your exempt from having to submit a declaration.
And is that different than what?
Yes.
So that is a change.
That is a major change, actually.
Great.
Then looking through the rule, I didn't see any safety valve, for example, for a temporary change application where, you know, for example, you have a big group of rights that you need to move to a different well, to wells down there. Anyway, I can foresee a situation where you need to do something for this irrigation season that on the rule, it would require you to go through this process that would effectively prevent you from being in compliance for irrigation season. Is there a safety valve?
The only thing I can think, and I guess it would depend on how the stager looks at it, is that one of the requirements is that the nature of the change requires quantification. And so I think the stager can decide that this type of change doesn't require that, and that would exempt it from the requirement. Well, it might be a temporary change, something you're just doing. But also just to change the point of diversion, and that's all you're doing. That doesn't require.
But it's diverting
from.
have it in your system, but you wouldn't be doing that unless you're one of those who are there for a long time and that never occurred.
We have to have a situation where we had 7 ag rights irrigation facilities, quantify that, about 75 acres. The whole group, the change was filed to go municipal for the 75 acres. And actually didn't have to come back and quantify that, keeping the group together, the whole group was using it in NMI, but if all group got written, we would exempt that. We have to just keep the whole group together, changing the nature of this irrigation. On an entire group, you're talking about. On that one, it came back and it was a 75 acre feed, but it had a very limited distinction orientation associated with that. It's a good one. Have a particular water. And when they serve proof on that, they have a correct calculation. Which number of acre feet must go to the next one? Kept the group together and moved it.
So if you like the group, you're in, it's okay.
We are happy to meet and talk through this. This has been a critical problem through my whole career. How we get these things solved and get them identified. And we have people with supplemental rights. On the example that Dallin brought up of a farmer with 5 rights, and he sold one of them. He's got 4 now. He's doing the same thing with the 4 rights. He used to do it the 5, but he sold something away. And he sells another right. I know he's got 3 rights. He's doing the whole thing. He was doing his 5 rights. He's got 2 sold out there. And says, something's not right with that. You've got to give something up if you're going to sell something. So we're just trying to make sure we got things quantified here. Thank you for coming up. And these things will be available on the website. Download them and ask these questions. 17th of December, let's set that date for comments to come in. To our office, based on this meeting, we'd like to have your input, and we would like to make whatever changes we need to make. So, thank you so much.